Now from the rational and clear in the form of Bud Hall. Bud speaks with many hats, and today it's the Global Alliance for Community Engaged Research. So I'll just hand over to Bud now to take over the second half of the presentation.
As you know, I'm from British Columbia. Whenever we speak in a large group in British Columbia, we always we always tell people who we are and where we are from, and we give acknowledgement. So, in my tradition, I would say that I'm a settler heritage, you know, English settler heritage, and that I'm a guest on Coast Salish and Strait Salish. Those are the First Nations people, and I'm pleased to be a visitor on that territory. And wherever I go in that part of the world, and I extend it here, I always give thanks to the people of the traditional people of the territory on which I'm standing. And so we're very much in Scotland. I acknowledge, the clans and the traditional people of Scotland, and I'm grateful to be on this territory. All of us have been traditional have been tribal peoples at one time or another throughout history, but obviously some of us are a bit more detribalized. I'm director on leave now. I'm here in England and then later on in Spain of something called the Office of Community-Based Research, which is an office which facilitates research partnerships between the community and the university on terms determined by the community. I'm also working with a number of people, some allies here in this room, on something called the Global Alliance for Community Engaged Research. That's a little easier to read. And what I'm going to talk to you a little bit about today are some of the preliminary thoughts that are coming out of a study that I've been involved with, a comparative international study looking at community university research partnerships in different parts of the world and trying to imagine, what we can say about them and why we should care about this kind of work. And these next slides. I've presented on this only one other time, and I'm really in the developmental kind of phase of trying to develop some of these concepts. So I deliberately have chosen to share some of these thoughts here today with you, and would really love, to have your critical feedback and suggestions. I may be, totally, off base, or maybe there's something here. So I start with this thing that says knowledge is hot, 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 hot. So what I've noticed is that a number of years now we've been familiar with the concept of the knowledge economy. Primarily a kind of a skills, building up skill capacity in the context of competitive nation states and the global economy. We've got the concept of knowledge society, which broadens out that understanding of the relationship between knowledge and the rest of society, and has some interpretations or some definitions, some reference to values. We've got things like knowledge commons, knowledge exchange, knowledge mobilization, knowledge translation, or what I say down at the bottom is knowledge whatever. So there's something about this notion of knowledge, and I think as adult educators we might say knowledge / learning. There's something about knowledge which is pretty important. And it's pretty important, and it's so important that it's attracted the attention of, not only governments and states, but business and industry as well. So what I am trying to think about is whether or not there's some value in starting to think or starting to speak about either a knowledge movement or a knowledge democracy movement or something in that range. And the reasons why I'm suggesting that is, what I would want to know is, would that help us in terms of, the kind of, we talk about transformation, political, social, and cultural transformation. We want to see we want to see our work undergirded by the values that we believe in. We want to make impact in vulnerable communities. We want some of our to have an impact in the places where we are living and working. And we want to be able to privilege, at least give permission to alternative knowledge traditions. And what I'm saying is that when we look for our place, you know, as educators or community people or university people or whatever, evidence-based whatever, in concepts like knowledge economy, we are fitting into somebody else's kind of framework, and we're not having a lot of impact. And I would say the same goes for knowledge society, although there's more space for, you know, a more inclusive vision. Society should include the vulnerable, should include these kinds of categories. But I'm not sure that some of us feel that we're losing a bit of ground. So if we were to think about a knowledge, I've been trying to think about, well, what is the knowledge movement? And if we can conceptualize a space like this, is there a space that we could conceptualize where the kinds of practices that we've been working on for years, where we've got, you know, a kind of a toehold, whether or not, and which put us in a kind of a central place and put the kinds of communities, processes, and groups of people that we are allies to or part of and so forth, in a position of privilege, rather than always being the tack on, you know, to a kind of global assembly line or kind of global governance kind of vision that somebody else has come up with. So when I think about where would a knowledge movement come from? Well, I think that one of the places that this kind of discourse and practice is coming from are structures like my own Office of Community-Based Research, the Community University Partnership Project that is going on at Brighton, and similar things that are happening, you know, in different parts of the world. And I can go into that, but there really has been in the last 10, 15 years a much more interest in the responsibility and the ways in which universities can relate to and contribute to the lives of people in those communities where they are located. I think that there have always been links between numbers of us in our citizen capacity and various social movements. And I look around this room and I know some of you are connected, deeply connected to a variety of social movements individually. So what I'm thinking about is whether or not, how could we be more intentional around linking some of our work to social movements. The world of participatory research, participatory action research, you know, cooperative inquiry, you know, feminist research methods, indigenous research methods, qualitative research. You know, 30 years ago, this was very difficult to get a space in the university. Now it's everywhere. So we've developed, and there's been a rich development of very many different kinds of processes. Those are tools which we have. You know, those of us who you've come out of this kind of engaged community work, we have those, and I think that they can contribute to what we might think of as a knowledge movement. So another piece which some of you may be a part of, which is rather new to me, but it's sometimes called the A2K movement. This is digital democracy. It's been led by IT and librarians and so forth, and it's about making the knowledge which has been created in the world available to everybody as a right. It's a big movement, and it's an interesting movement, and it's one that I, at least in speaking personally, I have not done as much with, but I think is a very interesting element if we start to think about how do we patch up all these things together. And of course, I'm speaking here. And coming from adult education, one of the things that, you know, we've got, you know, it's the history, you know, the adult education tradition, particularly here in you know, in England and Scotland, and the community education tradition, which is a bit more here in Scotland, is one that has so much to offer. It curiously, it often is now there's often a disconnection between the new kind of things that are like these offices of community-based research and the adult education discourse, but there needn't be. There needn't be. So if you look at community-engaged scholarship, so I just go through a few of the examples, and our own office is one. One of the things that's happening is there's quite an active debate now about how to recognize excellence in this kind of engaged scholarship. How does a scholar activist create a career? Can you make a career, or must you simply be, tied to the number of refereed journal articles you have? And there's quite an active discussion that's going on. Very important part of this is the recognition, the growing recognition, that knowledge is not created simply in universities. Knowledge is created, in fact, most knowledge is not created in universities. Most knowledge, is created in communities, in workplaces, in places where people are trying to do something. And later on, academics come along, kind of observe it, theorize it, and become experts in it. But in fact, almost every kind of social change you can imagine has first been tried out on the ground by, real people doing it, and then later theorized. So this kind of a movement needs to recognize that the multiple sites of knowledge creation. I'm going to come back to global networks, and Mike Osborne is going to tell us a little bit about some of that work. So these are just examples. Examples from here. I mean, many of you are involved either locally, or part of a kind of a movement here in England, or perhaps even part of a global network on some of these kinds of issues. But these, the movements of the day are around. You find sometimes things like the World Social Forum, which are kind of a collective expression when everybody gets together. There's a rich, deep, very knowledgeable, very well-informed, very networked set of activities and energy that's going on all around us. And sometimes we tap into that energy and sometimes we don't. This is just an example of different, we could generate in this room probably 50 examples of engaged, participatory, approaches to using the arts or theater or photography or drama and it's got lots of different names, but it's very they share a similar purpose. The knowledge access movement, which as I say for me is newer, maybe for some of you in this room you're more plugged into it. That's there's something called the Public Knowledge Project, which is give you free software for creating electronic journals, and all you need to do is you can use that software free if you agree to make your journals available, free of charge, through the web to everybody. And they've got hundreds of journals that have taken it, that have gotten started and gotten going as a result of that Public Knowledge Project. Digital democracy in all of its various forms, and there's quite a push. Within this kind of knowledge access movement, there is a push, there's a discourse about moving beyond patriarchal and Eurocentric knowledge. The web itself, one could argue, is dominated by English. It's dominated, really is Eurocentric, but it's strong, and there's a strong discourse and strong activities. And one example is there's a website out of the University of Arizona. It's called the Indigenous Commons, and it's all, it's trying to respond to this knowledge access movement, but by giving visibility to indigenous knowledge, indigenous ways of knowing from different parts of the world. So how, if we thought that this would, this knowledge movement, I mean, how would we How would we move forward in that? Well, these are just a few ideas, and I hope that you'll have some others. One of the things that we would want to argue for is more funding for strengthening the research capacity of civil society organizations. Because we can't have partnerships, universities aren't going to have effective partnerships, and civil society organizations themselves are not going to have a capacity to name the issues that they want to work on, or to be involved in, you know, providing evidence around in the areas where they are active, unless they have a better research capacity. And many of our organizations, the ones in Victoria, are very thinly staffed. You get, let's say, a kind of a small community organization, you may have two or three quite able people. One of them is a director, probably has to do the communications, the main communication stuff, contact the funders. You know, another one might be a communications person and so forth. They don't have, you know, it isn't automatically in the idea of a community group that you have a researcher. And yet, if we don't invest in our communities from a knowledge generation capacity, reflection, systematization of work, and then partnership capacity amongst civil society organizations and with universities, the partnership is going to be loaded. It's going to be one way, and the university kinds of people are always going to have more time, and it'll end up kind of university speak more times than we want. We need more recognition in higher education that knowledge, in fact, is created in more places than just, you know, in a lab, you know, in a university. Not that it isn't, but there are other places. And so the role of the university isn't to be to maintain the monopoly on knowledge creation. It's to be, we give universities, higher education institutions, we give them a privileged place in our society to manage issues around knowledge. So we need more recognition of structures like community-based research, the CUPP, and these beacons of public engagement and so forth. We obviously need more north-south. I was talking to Roy as we were walking over here trying to find this place with our little iPhone, occasionally making the wrong turn. But a lot of these ideas about engaged scholarship arose from Gandhi and, India and, Tanzania and Nicaragua and all these other parts of the world, the so-called global south. But in the last sort of 10 years, it's been like Talwar and, you know, all these other networks that have become well-known. It's all kind of European, North American, European networks. And so they are now kind of reaching out saying, hey, we've got some great new stuff. You guys are really going to love that. And we need to work to give visibility to the history of Southern leadership in this area, and also to balance it out. We need to be more upfront about our linkages with social movements. And this is not easy stuff. But I think that if we if we are playing an active role in a social movement, there should be a way for us to get credit, you know, if we're in the university, to get credit for that kind of work. It isn't just, you know, sort of nighttime and weekends. There should be a way for us to imagine getting credit for it. I don't mean just community. I mean actually social movement work. So how we do that, I don't know. But I think it's more in thinking through more intentional linkages with the social movements of our time is going to provide, you know, the kind of fuel for this kind of a thing that we won't get from some other place. The last thing I'll speak to is long-term partnerships. I don't know how many of you, you know, have either been in a community organization when, you know, university or research institutes come along, but they usually come along when they've got a grant. They might have talked to you ahead of time, get your letter of support to help them get the grant, but you're going to be in on the beginning, and everybody's just peachy keen. They're all friendly. They're all happy. They're all happy to see you, and you know you're making friends, and then you know about halfway through the second year, somehow it comes up in a conversation, oh, well, you know, we've only got 18 months left on the grant. Got to start, you know, wrapping the thing up. 18 months, I'm just getting to know you. You know, it's taken me a long time to get over sitting down with a university person and accepting that person as somebody I really want to, you know, put my good community-based time into. So this is this kind of the funding pattern that we've got in university, the grant thing, is really difficult for from the community side. So one of the things that we need to be thinking about in, you know, in lots of different ways is how can we create long-term 10-year relationships? There's, you know, I was telling you know, a number of folks about an example in you know, in Canada, where a particular a community psychology unit entered into a 10-year agreement with an anti-poverty organization in the Kitchener-Waterloo area of Ontario, saying that they will put 10 people, 10 master's students and 2 doctoral students at, you know, in that organization every year for 10 years. That organization now has got labor power, and they are going to be able to plan the use of those students. That's just one unit. That's one small academic unit. If we did that with 15 academic units, you know, in my university, or 25 academic units in my university, we would really be providing some practical help for our community-based organizations and the social movements in our area, and our students would be learning a lot more. I think I'm going to turn now to Michael. Let's see. Yes, I'm going to turn now to Michael to talk to us a little bit about what he calls the big tent.
We've had the opportunity through an organization that I co-direct, which is called Pascal, which some of you know here. As I've said many times, that very poor acronym for an observatory on place management, social capital, and learning regions doesn't quite work, does it? To be part of a much bigger network around the relationship between universities and their communities in relation to engagement. And you'll find, I think, all of you should have next to you this document that we produced. And I should say that Bud produced, which has undergone quite a lot of working through. Only 2 pages, but it's a statement that comes from a range of organizations, some of which you've already heard about today, some you haven't, which range from the Centro Boliviano de Estudios Multidisciplinarios. Is that okay?
Beautiful.
Yeah? Muy bien. Liam? Perfecto. Gracias. The Commonwealth Universities Extension and Engagement Network, and GASA, Global Alliance on Community Engaged Research, which Bud has been talking to, the Global Universities Network for Innovation, GUNI, Living Knowledge Network, Pascal, PRIA, which Darlene was talking about, the TALWA Network, which, again, Bud mentioned, which I guess, and I don't know if we've exactly done our sums, but they represent, we think, several thousand universities from around the world. And here in Glasgow, as Pascal, we represent a relatively small proportion of all those universities, but we're very pleased to be part of it. And what we've been trying to do, essentially, is map out our commitment as a set of organizations to engagement between universities and their communities. It builds, from my perspective, it builds to a certain extent on work that we've been doing, and Chris Duke is here as well, and he might make some comments, where we've been attempting across a range of regions in the world to map the types of engagements that universities have with their regions across a range of domains, economic, social, environmental, cultural, and foment exchanges across those regions. And I guess what we've been trying to do is emphasize that those types of engagements are well beyond what we consider to be traditional in terms of knowledge exchange. I mean, we all know that universities particularly in the international domain, emphasize knowledge transfer in relation to technologies and science and so on. What we're trying to do to a large extent here is emphasize some of those other things that universities do, which I think Bud has been talking about. With another hat on, and all of us wear lots of hats, I'm part of a U21 network, and U21 stands for Universitas 21, which is a set of, as the name would suggest, 23 universities that are engaged in, that work together. They're research-intensive universities within the top 100 through these league tables, which during our discussions in London we said were absolute rubbish. And they've become even more rubbish now that universities like UCL, Glasgow and Edinburgh have probably fallen down the league, so they're no good anymore. But Edinburgh, many of you from Edinburgh University here, Edinburgh is a member, Glasgow is a member. As part of that network, and when we met in Vancouver recently, that was my excuse for having been in British Columbia, we were talking about what the specific and particular role for research universities was in relation to their communities, which can be very variable. If we look at, say, UBC, University of British Columbia, where I was, it's not just about technology transfer and the research that's generated. It's about what's done through a magnificent place like the Chan Center for Performing Arts. It's about the Museum of Anthropology. It's a whole range of activities which engage those universities with their communities. Obviously, it's much more than that as well, and Bud has talked about working collaboratively, cooperatively with communities and respecting the knowledges that are created inside communities and taking those on board within universities. Not sure where we're going to go with this network. You can read a little bit more about it on our website, that's the Pascal website, as well as a number of other websites. We've committed ourselves to collaborating together over time around a series of specific seminars and possibly a meeting of not the virtual big tent, which was the meeting that we had in London 3 weeks or so ago, but in a real big tent, perhaps in Delhi in 2012, where we start getting these networks, which represent institutions in the north and the south, together in one site. So I think we should be happy and proud that Glasgow, in a little way, is part of that particular network, which I should say is down to Bud in the first instance, because it was his big idea for the Big Ten. So keep a watch on our website and keep a watch on what activities stem from this particular network. Yep. I won't say any more at this point, except to ask you, well, do you want to say a bit more about
that? No, I was just going to say thank you, Mike. And so, you know, we'd love to hear comments on the, you know, the kind of the knowledge movement stuff, you know, whether you think there's anything there or, you know, you'd like to, in a kind way, you know, suggest that I get on with some of my other work in some other directions and get back to basics. And Mike and I would be happy to hear any of your thoughts about this you know, this kind of advocacy and networking that we're trying to do, you know, with trying to influence the world of higher education, some of the policy people and the funders, so that they will start to support, you know, a new generation of community university engagement.